Welcome to Journal Club for October 26, 2024. I'm Malcolm Dix. If you've been listening to Journal Club for a while, you've probably noticed that a lot of the machine learning, deep learning, and computer vision episodes have a similar story arc. The researchers have a problem. They collect data. They clean and normalize that data. They extract and select the features they care about. They pick a few algorithms to test against each other. They run the training. They choose a few metrics to use to validate the models and benchmark them against each other. And then sometimes they also stack models together or use some kind of ensemble learning. That storyline exists in Journal Club so frequently because that is the most common flow for how this research happens. But what our storylines don't necessarily capture is that many of these steps are highly manual, tedious, and repetitive. I might, for example, casually mention that a researcher trained models on KNN, Random Forest, and SVM. But that doesn't mean that those three training cycles looked anything like each other. They might have been in totally separate programs or notebooks with different libraries happening at different times on different machines with a number of discrete manual idiosyncratic steps for each one. Getting different models trained with different algorithms for a given set of data isn't generally a push-button thing. Today's research is trying to change that for a narrow class of problems. The authors posit that when you're training models on time series data, that is, when you're trying to create a time series forecasting model, the format of your data is so predictable and uniform that the entire training process is actually generalizable. No matter what field you're working in, what problem you're trying to solve, none of that really matters. Your inputs are always going to be columnar data with a timestamp column. Your outputs are always a data frame with a timestamp, predicted value, and a few other common attributes. And that's it. Based on this realization, the authors built a tool that would completely normalize and abstract away the process of training, validating, comparing, and replicating time series forecasting models. It's basically time series forecasting models in a box. Turnkey operation. They built a tool where all you'd need to do is import the time series data, select which algorithms you want to compare to each other, select a loss function, and run it. Everything else would just take care of itself. The system would do all the tedious pre-processing and splitting. It would run the training in parallel. If you wanted to stack classifiers, it would do that. If you wanted to train multiple models on different sets of data, it could do that as well. And when it was done, it would compare and benchmark the finished models with each other. They called the tool DSIPTS. I've been trying to think of a way to pronounce that all day, so I think I'm going with DSIPS. DSIPS is a library. It is built on top of and orchestrates the usage of PyTorch Lightning, Pandas, NumPy, sklearn, and Hydra. They wrote it in Python and put it up on GitHub. And this paper is, in effect, them debuting this open source project to the world. Let's break down what this project is for, how it's structured, and how you can use it. What DSIPS is for? The authors had three overarching goals for this project. One, transparency. They don't mean creating transparent models. That's a task the industry hasn't really figured out yet. They mean transparency in how inputs are fed into the system, how outputs are retrieved from the system, and the shape of those outputs. Two, reproducibility. I personally think they should have used a different term here. But what they mean by reproducibility is that the models can be expected to possess a predictable and consistent level of quality and integrity. In other words, when you use this tool, you can be assured that there are no weird, bad training practices happening that you have to worry about. Three, expandability. We might refer to this as modularity or extensibility. The program is structured to be extended. It comes with a preset basket of training algorithms, for example, but more can be added in a pretty straightforward way. DSIPS structure and usage. When you visit the DSIPS repository, which is linked on the first page of the PDF, the first thing you'll notice is that it's not straight Python. It's a Jupyter notebook. For those who haven't used a Jupyter notebook before, you've probably used a Google Colab notebook or even VS Code with the Jupyter extension turned on. These are the same basic ideas. If you've never heard of any of these at all, it's probably because you're a software engineer but not an ML engineer and also not a data scientist. For you folks, let me give you the 30-second rundown. A Jupyter notebook is a program that can be run as a desktop application or as a web-based tool. I think of it as Google Docs for data people. With a notebook, users write and run code in chunks called cells. They can combine code, text, equations, and visualizations in a single doc all together in the same place. It's like a scratch pad and a REPL and a doc and a README and an IDE all rolled into one. It's not WYSIWYG per se, but it is execute in place. So just imagine you had a Google Doc open, and in that doc, you could just write a line of Python that imports a library and runs a calculation. That code would just execute right there where you wrote it, and you'd see the results right below the line you just wrote. If you grew up like I did with simple text editors, this is jarring. But you get used to it, and it's actually pretty cool. Anyway, DSIPS is a Jupyter notebook in which the authors have saved a bunch of the work they've already done. So it's like when someone shares a Google Doc with you that's a boilerplate for a contract or something. It's all there. You just need to customize it for whatever you're doing. Behind the scenes, embedded within the Jupyter notebook and available in the repository, in the DSIPS/models directory, are a whole bunch of training algorithms that you can use. There is a base class that provides all the common functions that each algorithm needs to be able to do to integrate with the larger system, and then each separate algorithm is a different file and is implemented as an extension of that base. So if you wanted to add your own algorithm to the system, you'd also just extend that base. This is the extensibility I was talking about earlier. All these algorithms present themselves in the Jupyter Notebook workspace as a list of algorithms that you can select when you're training your models. Much of the rest of the codebase consists of utilities and helpers that allow you to use the various models seamlessly. They also put a lot of effort into defining a clean data ingestion and pre-processing interface so that all you as a user have to do is say, import this, train on that, and it handles the rest. Also, interestingly, the interface is structured so that you can either say, train these different models on the same data, stack these models together, or train the same model on different instances of the data. This latter functionality is largely inherited from DSIP's primary use case or deployment where it's being used in the wild right now. That's a project called Horizon InCube. In that project, they are creating predictive models for energy demand and consumption. And they need to be able to train models that are specific to a single energy customer. So if you have an apartment building, for example, and you want to use each apartment's individual historical data to train a model that only predicts that apartment's particular energy usage, you can do that in DSIPS fairly easily. You can say, this model should be trained on this set of the data, but also train another model on someone else's data, which is the same format. Full transparency, I haven't played with DSIPS yet. I just really like the idea. If you decide to give it a spin, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how well or not well it worked for you. Are the author's assumptions about the normalized presentations of all time series problems valid? Or are there a whole host of time series problems that don't fit into the way that this project is structured? Regardless, I think DSIPS is a preview of what we can expect to happen for much of the ML model training landscape over time. Jupyter notebooks already abstract away a significant amount of the low-level details, but there's still a learning curve. And that presents a problem because these are tools used by researchers who may be experts in their field, but not necessarily computer scientists. So I think the use case and the desire is there to push the experience towards one in which even more of the process is abstracted away. In the future, will researchers be able to train custom and complex ML and deep learning models in what feels like a no-code or low-code tool? Will they be able to compare different algorithms, switch out loss functions, and stack classifiers all with the push of a button? I think the answer is probably yes. In that light, I think it's best to think of projects like DSIPS as snapshots in time, snapshots of where we are as an industry right at this moment, a stepping stone on the path to where this is all headed. Will people be using libraries like DSIPS a few years in the future? Probably not, or at least not directly, but there might be a whole bunch of even more abstracted away GUI-based programs built on top of it that provide an even more friendly interface for non-technical users. We'll all just have to wait and see. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.